Welcome to season 2 of the Relatable Research podcast.
Today on the podcast, we have Kathy Sutherland with us. She is a professor at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. So we're really excited to chat to her about all the work that she does. So Kathy, thank you for being with us. And maybe to start, if you could tell us a little bit about your career up until this point.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to talk to you today. So I studied geography and mathematics at the University of Cape Town, and I did my honors in geography, and then I'd actually done an HD as well. So I wanted to go into school teaching for a while, and I was very lucky to teach at Rondebosch Boys High School, where I taught geography and maths. And then I went and traveled for a year and really became so interested in cities and different forms of urbanism, I guess, in different parts of the world. And so I came back to teaching and then did my master's. So I didn't do what most people do, which is just to follow through with all these different levels of degrees. I went out and taught for a while, and I then thought long and hard about what I wanted to do my master's on. And informal settlements had started to appear. This was in 1994. So, of course, there was all this transition happening in our country and different settlement patterns emerging. And so then I did my master's in informal settlements, actually studying an informal settlement in Cape Town, in Mazamayetu. And then went back to teaching for a while, and then got the opportunity to move to Durban, which is my most favorite city in the world, and to come to Durban and work at the University of Durban-Westville, and then I moved to Natal University, so as a geography lecturer. And then obviously those two universities merged, and I'm proud to say that by the 5th of June, I've been at either UDW, UKZN, or Natal University for 30 years as first a lecturer in geography and in environmental science and geography department. And then I moved to the development studies department in the School of Built Environment and Development Studies, where I've been for 15 years. But at UKZN, essentially for 30 years, as a lecturer and as doing research on urban sustainable development and really focusing on Durban.
Yeah, amazing. What an incredible career up until this point. And also, I think really interesting to hear, a lot of people think that research is very linear in terms of the path that you take, but that sometimes you do get a chance to step away from it and realize that you want to come back and maybe focus on something specific. So not always the easiest choice to choose what you want to do, and actually good to get some experience elsewhere to be able to then choose. But just talking about your career and maybe what you do currently, what do you enjoy most about your career?
So I'm very privileged to work at UKZN and in Durban, where we have very close relationships and research partnerships actually with eThekwini Municipality and also communities in the city. So most of my research now, I guess I would frame it as environmental governance, where myself and the research team that I've built up, so I've got a whole research team of young, really amazing young researchers who work on these projects with me. And essentially we look at sustainable development in Durban. Obviously now we focus more on resilience building because of all the crises that our city's had, but I really am more strongly focused on sustainable development or sustainability or sustainable transformations. And of course, working in a city like Durban, so many things have happened, but I've worked on the big mega projects in the city previously with my colleague, Diane Scott, who was an incredible mentor to me. So I think anyone developing a research journey, you need to find yourself a great mentor. And I was very privileged to have Professor Diane Scott as my mentor. And we worked together along with Sibongile Buthelezi, and we started to understand that if we really wanted to address urban challenges, we had to co-produce knowledge with different actors in the city. And so I suppose the one theme that's been really long-standing in my career is this working with different forms of knowledge, different understandings and conceptions of urban development and sustainable development, and trying to work together to understand how we address particular challenges. So I've been working for a long time now with the WASH R&D Centre at UKZN on sustainable and innovative and resilient sanitation systems. So as you would know, the sewers in our city don't reach all of the people in our city, and it's likely that we're going to be able to extend those sewers because of the topography of the city, the cost, the high water demand that sewers have. And so we've been working on non-sewered sanitation. And trying to think about how do we find different types of sanitation technology that can give meet people's basic rights to sanitation and also to water. And then we've had to sort of climate proof that now, because of course, with all the floods in the city, that's been a big focus of our work. So currently I'm working a lot in informal settlements and the peri-urban areas of our city under traditional governance, where you different forms of planning and sort of hybrid ways of planning that are outside often formal administrative processes, and working with communities and with the municipality and with other actors to try and find sustainable ways of moving forward to create an urban environment that meets the needs of everybody. So much more equitable and fair and environmentally sustainable environment in Durban. Because of course in Durban, we rely a lot on our ecosystem services. We're very lucky that we've got so much biodiversity in Durban. And so another big focus of my work is how do we invest in ecosystem services? Because nature can really support people, particularly the most vulnerable communities in our city.
Such interesting work. And as you say, there are so many things that come up that like the flooding. And I think over the past couple of years, Durban has had probably more than any city that I've heard of in the country. We've had a lot of floods that have taken place. And so how the research behind that then links into kind of on the ground help to actually be able to change and to create good out of those kind of situations. And so, as you say, when these things happen and we're trying to implement new and helpful ways for people in all communities, you say that it's so important to have involvement of all the members and that the municipality generally is great. Have you ever found that that has been an issue over your years, or do you find that that involvement comes fairly easily and helps you in the work that you do?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question, the way that you've posed that. You know, because often we see that as an enabler, and you saying, is it difficult with research? But I think what is really interesting, and I've just done a recent paper on that, is that when you bring different groups together, so communities, the municipality, and we work very closely with sort of senior management and people that are in the municipality that are also acting in these spaces to try and bring about change. So they have different mandates and different knowledge systems that they draw on. And you've got communities that are also, you know, with very different perspectives. So, for example, we're trying to work on the rehabilitation of the Palmy catchment. But if you think about it, what does the rehabilitation of a catchment mean to someone living in an informal settlement or someone working in the municipality like Sean O'Donoghue in the climate adaptation branch and Simiso Bengu, or to us in the university where we are trying to promote this kind of longer term sustainable transformation? So we all have the same goal. We want to rehabilitate the catchment in the Palmy River, but have different ideas about what a rehabilitated catchment means to us. And so I think for us as researchers, what's been really interesting is we've played an intermediary role where we often the knowledge brokers between different knowledge systems. And one of the things I've tried to develop skills in and with my research team and younger researchers is what are the skills we need to sort of be knowledge brokers that we can translate scientific knowledge, say from science and academia, or, you know, technical knowledge or practitioner knowledge from the municipalities, and then really localized embedded knowledge from communities. How do we translate all those different forms of knowledge so that we can bring them together and understand each other and actually come up with solutions? And we have one really interesting example, an early flood warning system that we've developed. And there we've had to bring in all these different forms of knowledges, and we actually try. It's a system that works for people and for the municipality and for the city as a whole.
That sounds incredibly interesting. And as you say, I think so good to hear that more times than not, that involvement and communication between the different role players actually works really well. And so that is really good. And with the new flood system that you're talking about, and that could you explain that a little bit more and what you guys are currently working on?
Yeah, so I think to go back to your earlier point and your very important question about what's difficult about doing that, and you were saying, is it ever hard? And I must respond back to that important question of yours, is that when you bring different forms of knowledges together, it often can create conflict, it can create misunderstanding. So as I said, if we've all got different views of what a rehabilitated catchment is about and you're trying to put resources towards that or find solutions, then you start getting conflict because people want different things. They get frustrated if it's not working in the way that they should see it's working. And so often you have to deal with this kind of conflict and tension. But what we saw with the development of the community-based early flood warning system is that we all had a goal of having a early warning system in the Palmy catchment that could really warn the most vulnerable people. Well, everyone in the catchment, but particularly the informal settlement at the bottom of the catchment. And so we started collectively drawing on knowledge and skills that everybody had. So Westville residents were collecting rainfall data in their rain gauges and reporting to us that 40 millimeters of rain had fallen. And we started to notice that when it was over 40 millimeters, the community in Quarry Road West was reporting that the river was starting to break the banks and wash away houses. And then we knew it took about 40 minutes for the water to travel from Westville to the bottom of the catchment. And so we started to piece all of this information together. And then with the help of the municipality that has a forecast early warning system that actually uses radar, it uses stream gauges and rainfall gauge data, all together on a WhatsApp, two different WhatsApp groups, we started putting the scientific knowledge, the practitioner knowledge, the community knowledge together, and we started to be able to develop this warning system. And we're still evolving that. And what's really interesting now is that we're looking at different ways that we can translate the scientific knowledge that comes from the South African Weather Service, the initial warnings, which we always get a few days before, right down to this real-time warning, which we can now do because community members have cell phones, they've got smartphones that can actually video and send us images. And so we all communicate with each other and we try and then we can work out when we need to try and speak about people evacuating, because only the South African Weather Service can actually give a command that you've got to evacuate. That's by the law of the country. But through this sharing of knowledge, people are forewarned and you find that everybody starts making better decisions about whether they can stay in their house or whether they can evacuate. So we've been testing that out and we're still building that, and it's really very exciting.
Yeah, very, very exciting. And so to be able to have that, I think, engagement with the community, and even as you said, doing that very easily through like a WhatsApp group, or being able to even just over WhatsApp send pictures or videos. And those are really the people that are most vulnerable. So to have their involvement is obviously so important to be able to make the system work, and then to be able to, I think, warn of these floods in future.
Yeah, we've been working on it a lot in the Palmies, and then we've started to work in Polani informal settlement in Lamercy in the north. They have a different risk because they're at landslide risk and they don't have as good cell phone coverage. So we've realized that's a major factor, that if we could get data to Polani, because we also warn them of storm cells coming. We're trying to scale it up to different parts of the city, and the municipality is working really hard with the university and with communities so that we can try and get what's generalizable so that we can scale that across the city, and then what's specific knowledge. So again, we can draw in local knowledge. So in each area, people can collaborative groups and then actually warn and help each other, like many of the ratepayers groups or, you know, all the community groups we have across the city, a very similar principle. But this is about early warning systems. But using science right from the South African Weather Service, eThekwini Municipality's radar, which really gives us very good real-time data on storms, and then rain gauges and stream gauges and rain gauges that are all over the city. So it's a lot of learning that's happening, and we're hoping it's going to be able to move across the whole city as we go along.
Yeah, and so encouraging, I think, for people to know, because very often we are unaware of the work that gets done behind the scenes. And so especially with something that affects so many people when we do have flooding, really encouraging to know that that work is being done, and then it is then able to be scaled across the province. So really, really interesting and encouraging work. And maybe just with another project that you mentioned earlier with the sanitation system, I don't know if you still work on that or if that was a previous project, but I'm sure will be something that's really interesting for people to maybe hear a little bit more about.
Yes, so that's really ongoing work. We've been working really in Durban since 2000, actually, since the boundaries of the city shifted. And as I said, the coverage of the centralized sanitation, you know, sewerage system didn't reach everybody in our city. And of course, that creates a huge huge amount of inequality in our city where people have different sanitation systems or poorly functioning sanitation systems. And then in 2016, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation Reinvent the Toilet project chose Durban as the global case study for testing all the international technologies for non-sanitation in the city. And so the WASH R&D Center, which I'm a research associate of, we were doing all the assessments of these technologies with the tech developers that came from all around the world to test out these different technologies for sanitation. And so we developed an engineering field testing platform, and that's ongoing in the city. So we're still working on lots of different forms of sanitation technology. And actually, the Gates Foundation has just recently funded the testing of three what are meant to be resilient sanitation systems, the back ends of communal ablution blocks in informal settlements as a form of flood resilience. But interestingly, these recycle the flush water of the toilets. And as you would probably know, Durban's had to cut its water budget by 8.4% because we have this huge amount of non-revenue water that we get lost in the city all the time. And so interestingly, the city's discourse around this project has shifted from flood resilience to actually water resilience, because these toilets are recycling water and it's being supported. It's a municipal project as well, along with the WASH R&D Center to test this, and Kanyisa projects and PPT. And we're really trying to understand if these sanitation systems could be implemented in informal settlements. We also have the Kalula dry toilets that we are now paid for sanitation in informal settlements, and we're monitoring those. There's about 140 of those in different informal settlements in the northern parts of the city. And so that's ongoing research we're doing with communities to see how they're responding to those sanitation systems. There, they're actually paying to have their own private toilets. And so we're doing a lot of work on that with Ruth Cottingham at Kanyisa Projects. And so we're working on different forms of sanitation with communities to try and understand how we can create equitable, dignified, accessible, and safe sanitation for all. But of course, one could be critiqued for that, because you might be seen as perpetuating inequality, because, you know, we've got flush toilets on septic tanks, someone else has got flush toilets on sewerage, and now you're asking other people to have non-sewered sanitation. But I think that's going to happen all over the world in the future. And so I think Durban is really a front runner in trying to see whether you can combine centralized sanitation systems with non-sewered sanitation systems, so that actually everybody who has access to some form of sanitation has equity in the type of sanitation that's not necessarily the type, sorry, but the quality of sanitation that's delivered. So a lot going on in Durban with regard to this non-sewered sanitation. And as you know, with the floods, it knocked out all our big wastewater treatment works and put huge pressure on the sewer network. And so the flood supported, it gave us momentum for the non-sewered sanitation work, because we realized these big wastewater treatment works are at risk. And that's the UK. It's happening all over the world where these big centralized systems are not managing anymore. So I think we've got to create a more fragmented and diversified offering of sanitation services. And Durban is working really hard to try and understand what that might look like and might mean in the future.
Really is incredible. And I think what, again, a lot of people maybe don't realize is that there's also, like with the Gates Foundation as well, having funded certain things, that it also does become a global effort. And obviously it's not just challenges that South Africa faces, but also other countries. And so really incredible that Durban is one of those front runners, and that where we can, regardless of the type of sanitation that it is, I know you say there's lots of different ways that you guys are looking into that, but that it does start to promote equality for all people to be able to have access to just safe sanitation in whatever way that comes, which is fantastic. Yeah. And maybe just the last question, all of that has been so interesting, is just when you think about young researchers or students who are coming up who want to continue in this space in urban sustainability, what would be any advice that you would give them or an encouragement?
So I would really advise young researchers, what I would think would be the best way to approach urban sustainability is to, or sustainable development or resilience. And of course, lots of students are interested in climate change. I was talking to some students this morning about that. a lot of these are ideas that are evolving over time. I mean, of course, sustainable development's been around for a long time now. It's quite a stabilized discourse. But I would really say to a young researcher, think about your core discipline that you're going to approach these challenges with. Because while we're working in multidisciplinary ways and in transdisciplinary ways, as I've spoken about on this podcast, your core discipline, the discipline you come from, so I'm a geographer and a mathematician. I'm trained in geography. And so I always approach these problems from a geographical lens. Some of my other researchers, because I teach in development studies, are political scientists, some psychologists even, because we're looking at mental health and trauma related to floods now. So I would really choose a discipline. I would focus on a discipline that really inspires you and go and study in that discipline and become really well-versed in the ideas and methods and theories of that discipline. And then come into a program, and there's so many wonderful postgraduate degrees across South Africa, and we have such a strong honors offering, which really I think is very powerful in our South African education system. Choose an honors or a master's that then enables you, and even in your honors, maybe do it in your core discipline, and then find a master's where you can start applying what you've learned in that discipline to address urban, you know, if we say urban sustainability or sustainable development or resilience or climate resilience, and see what you bring from your discipline into this transdisciplinary space. And I really would encourage young people to work hard in particular disciplines and develop your training and your thinking and understand your own positionality because of that discipline. And then think, what can you offer when you look? And I was just saying to some of my colleagues today, we had a research excellence and equity partnership thing that I run. And I said to them, you know, if you look at South Africa, we have so many challenges. So there's so many things we can focus on. And we get so inspired by so many things. And that's why we sometimes get a bit lost. But what you return to is your disciplinary home. How do I and geographers think about society, space, and environment? So everything I tackle through that lens. Someone, a political scientist, will look at power more fundamentally. And looking at these problems, and then we have this goal or this normative idea of transformative, sustainable urban development, then we know how to do that. So that's what I would say to young researchers. Really be inspired and work hard in a particular disciplinary home, and then go into a multidisciplinary or transdisciplinary space. But that's quite old-fashioned, and so maybe, you know, younger researchers would see it differently. But it's interesting, at UKZN, we are restructuring our university back to discipline. So I think that's an interesting sign that disciplines really matter and count.
Yes, absolutely. And I think to also be able to do work that you love, and if that remains as your discipline, whatever work or project you then are involved in, as you say, you start from that base of what your discipline was, and then you get to work with people, which is also incredible, just from different disciplines, that then all of that becomes very collaborative. So really amazing. Thank you for your advice and for answering all the questions and just for being with us. We really, really appreciate it.
It was really, really nice to talk about these important ideas. Thank you so much.